We've been exploring the refrain section of the Satipatthana Sutta, that section of the teaching that's repeated over and over, encouraging us to engage in mindfulness with the body, feelings, mind states, and phenomena in a way that will support a deepening of understanding and a letting go, moving in the direction of non-clinging, which Gil spoke about yesterday. The first part of that, the first phrase in the refrain, Gil mentioned a couple nights ago and spoke briefly about this contemplation internally, externally, and both internally and externally. So that's the piece I'd like to go into this evening, this afternoon. As Gil mentioned, it's not really very clear what this refers to. It's not particularly described or elaborated in the Satipatthana Sutta itself. And there are different interpretations of what it might mean. The commentaries, and one place in the suttas, point to this internal and external, potentially referring to internally meaning observing our own experience, and externally meaning to observe the experience of others. Of other people, and internally and externally meaning to take in both. So here on retreat, we have been encouraging, from this perspective, we've been encouraging internal contemplation, and to speak about external contemplation, observing others' bodies, feelings, mind states, probably not such a good thing to be encouraging on retreat in a way. Just the sense of, am I being watched, you know, that kind of thing. So I think this is an interesting way to think about this teaching, this internal and external, to observe ourselves and others. And I think of it as a real beneficial exploration for daily life. So whether or not this is what it means, it has been an interesting kind of exploration, and I think it's useful. So given that we're kind of heading into our daily lives, I thought this would be a good time to explore this way of understanding this part of the text. There's some other places where there's an encouragement to be attentive to the experience of ourselves and the experience of others, most kind of predominantly, at least in my own connection with the suttas, with one very moving text that the Buddha gives to his own son. For me, it's a kind of it's a very powerful teaching he gives to his own son at the age of 7. So it's a teaching that a 7-year-old can understand, but it's very challenging to put into effect. So basically, He says to his son, before you do something, think about, reflect on how it's going to affect you, how it's going to affect others, and how it's going to affect both. If it's going to create affliction or distress in yourself, in the other, or in both, then you shouldn't do it. He said, but if you don't see that that's what would happen, if you don't see that that is what the consequence would be, then by all means do it. Go ahead and do that action. Then he goes on to say, and while you're doing something, check, reflect, is this going to create distress, affliction for yourself or other or both? And if it is creating, while you're doing it, affliction, then stop. And then he says, at the end, he says, and if afterwards reflect, did it create affliction for self or other or both? And if it did, then as he it says, lay it open to a wise person. So basically confess. And to me, you know, with a seven-year-old, that kind of means telling mom or dad, right? Tell mom or dad what you did and potentially have a conversation. You know, what can you learn from this? And also to undertake restraint in the future. So in this way, maybe the Buddha was giving his son a kind of an instruction on internal and external contemplation. Because we have to be aware in doing this kind of reflection on our actions and how they're going to affect ourselves and others. We have to be aware of how we are. We have to kind of maybe think about or model, consider how another person might respond based on our actions. An external kind of, an external contemplation. How might somebody else be impacted? And then the Buddha also encourages to think of both. Both self and other. So the this kind of exploration, really helpful in our daily lives to create harmony and to learn something about our own motivations, our own wishes and desires, and to be aware and conscious of how our actions, how our being in the world affects others. And so to really look at this weaving, interweaving of our actions and their effect on others. So observing internally, that's a lot of what we've been talking about this week. Looking at our own bodies, what are the sensations, feelings, being aware of the lived experience, learning about our own emotional landscape, our physical landscape, our mental landscape, understanding our thoughts, and as we begin to look with this kind of more continuous and clear mindfulness, the more continuous the mindfulness is, the more, I said this the other day, the more it reveals, the more it shows. It's almost as if the, and maybe it is as if it is what happens, I don't know, the, as mindfulness gets more continuous, things that have been what we might call subconscious, unavailable to our conscious attention, the mindfulness makes that subconscious barrier more permeable. And we start to see our underlying motivations and how our conditioning in from our history is entering into the present moment. And so we become more aware of what's happening for ourselves. We're encouraged with this kind of internal observation, the perspective of wise mindfulness, to see our experience as phenomena, kind of a body as a body, feelings as feelings, not my feelings, my mind states, my body, but a body, feelings happening. So not so much about, or to begin to see our experience less from the perspective of I, me, mine, and more just from the perspective of phenomena unfolding, conditioned nature of experience. The more we are curious about our experience from the perspective that the Satipatthana Sutta shows us, the more we actually see our experience in this way. So we've talked a lot about internally in this week, really. And we could kind of think that that's all mindfulness is about, is this internal looking inside. And yet there is this encouragement for external without a lot of explanation, but, you know, so let's reflect on it. Let's think about it. One thing that might be relevant to contemplate here is that in the sutta, it says we observe internally, and then it mentions externally. And it does it's not necessarily that the internally should be done first and then the externally, but often with these lists and various orders, the Buddha is very conscious of the order in which he says things. And so potentially the internal contemplation, the learning about our own experience, what we learn about our own experience as we look, that more impersonal or less personal perspective and just perspective of phenomena happening, that may set the stage or set the ground through which perhaps the external contemplation is more possible. Maybe first by really getting to know ourselves and our own experience, then as we turn to explore the experience of others, there's more skill already available. And maybe that internal skill is necessary first. There's one place in the suttas where it kind of implies this. This is a text in the Digha Nikaya, and I just discovered this today, so this is new for me. It's a kind of a funny sutta, or a lot of the texts in the Digha Nikaya are interesting. They're very elaborate texts given to many gods, and in this case, there is a god teaching, a god of one realm teaching the gods of other realms, and he's giving them what he understands the Buddha is saying. So it's not a teaching given directly by the Buddha, but it's somebody's understanding of what the Buddha said. So that's interesting. But in any case, he's teaching them a little bit about the Satipatthana Sutta. Here's what I understand the Buddha said about the Satipatthana Sutta. And so he first describes the the definition section that we've been to. One abides, observing, the body is a body, ardent, mindful, clearly comprehending, setting aside greed and distress for the world. So that part's familiar. And he goes on, as one thus abides, observing one's own body as a body, one becomes concentrated and serene. Being thus calm and serene, one gains knowledge and vision externally of the bodies of others. And so this is repeated for each of the four foundations. So establishing mindfulness internally, being aware internally of one's own body, feelings, mind states, one becomes serene, and being that calm and serene, one gains knowledge and vision externally of the bodies of others, the feelings of others, the mind states of others. So observing externally. I mean, we know, we look at people, and that's some form of observing externally. But again, our usual way of observing, and kind of the way we start when we start observing ourselves, it's all about I, me, mine, my feeling, my pain, my this, my that, and how it affects me. And observing others, often it's very much, there's a separation, there's a they, them, who they are. And it's not so much just knowing this is a being who is walking, or this is a being who is eating, or this is a being who is breathing. Maybe some of you have had that experience in this retreat. I know I had this at one, on my, my second retreat, or maybe my first month long at Spirit Rock. I was sitting next to someone who was breathing heavily, and I went and reported this to my teacher and how I was working with the practice. This was Gil. I went and reported this to Gil. And he said, well, you could just know the breathing of the other person. Just breathing in. Other person breathing in, breathing out is happening, breathing in is happening. You can kind of tell with the breath. That could be a form of this external contemplation, looking at it not as this person doing something that's affecting me, but just this is a phenomenon. This is breathing in, breathing out, happening externally. So with the body, looking at the body, we can do this, and the kind of exploration, the Satipatthana exploration again is the encouragement to abide observing the body as a body, whether this body or someone else's body. Feelings here or feelings in someone else. Ardent, clearly comprehending, and mindful, setting aside greed and distress for the world. So whether for ourselves or others, that's the encouragement, this encouragement to be curious about experience as experience, whether it's happening here or there. This, I think, in exploring this, we really kind of start to see how we project other onto somebody else. We create a them. It's not just a being breathing. It's how it affects me. We seem to take what others do personally. And so this invitation may begin to break some of that taking it personally down. So in observing this, exploring this possible observing others, observing the bodies of others, how they are, how they act, what their postures are, what they do, all of that. That part seems pretty possible in a way. I mean, we can look and see what other people are doing. Feelings, less possible to observe, maybe directly. It seems like a different kind of contemplation. It's more of an inference in a way. The suttas point to four different ways we can kind of understand or connect to what is happening in somebody else's mind. And one of them is psychic powers. But the other three are just normal, ordinary. Like, we can know what's happening in somebody else's mind by seeing them, by what they're doing, by seeing the expression on their face, by hearing what they're saying. And the third one is by further thinking about what you've heard and seen, like reflecting on what you've heard and seen. So the suttas offer a way to begin to kind of connect with what's happening in somebody else's mind through our ordinary, everyday kind of interactions. And if we are established in a kind of internal contemplation, if we are aware of how we are internally, I think this helps us to have a sense of what might be happening externally. I know I see this or kind of feel this a little bit in sitting with people and talking to them. There's a way in which I feel like, I don't know, it's a little bit of like connecting to the posture. We mirror each other. If somebody has an expression on their face, sometimes it's very natural. We mirror it. It comes onto our face. If you see somebody smile, you will smile often. So there's a kind of this mirroring that happens. It seems to be a natural piece of our human system. And so if you're attentive to, for instance, if sitting with somebody and kind of taking in how you are with them, sometimes what's happening internally can help inform you about what might be happening externally. So this is an interesting exploration. Begin to touch into some of what might be going on in other people. So this kind of external observation, we might see, for example, see somebody in the kitchen doing something, and maybe there's something they're doing with the drawer is stuck, and you see a little bit of a kind of a furrow on their brow and a little bit of agitation in their movement. And the feeling you might get is a sense of frustration. It's like, oh, there's frustration. Frustration is arising externally. That kind of observation, that kind of curiosity about observing externally may begin to help us find the same or closer to a less judgmental kind of observation. It's so easy and quick for us to judge others. We judge ourselves too. I mean, we see that through our own internal exploration. We see how quick we are to judge ourselves. And yet the practice is encouraging us to allow, to open to accept, to be with that and see what happens as we explore being with that. And so this encouragement of external observation is a similar kind of movement, perhaps, that we begin to be able to see judgment arising, frustration arising externally, and not take it personally. Not feel like it's about me, or not feel like I need to do something necessarily. It may be that there's something that needs to happen, but I think this exploration of external helps us to kind of tease apart when we are taking what something is happening in someone else as being somehow connected to me. Sometimes it might be, but so often it's just something is going on for someone else. So this external contemplation begins to help us cultivate the non-reactive, non-judgmental curiosity about what's happening with others. This can open us to so much compassion. Again, as we explore our own hearts and minds, we see just how hard it is to be in a body and to be subject to our conditioning and all of the habits and patterns we've been shaped by and the suffering that follows from our reactivity. We see how hard it is, and we see actually how little control we have. That sometimes those habits and patterns are so strong that they just express themselves. And we learn to have some open-heartedness for ourselves for that, some compassion for ourselves for that. And on the external side, that same possibility can be there. We can begin to understand, yeah, I see when I get frustrated or angry how much I express it and I say things I wish I hadn't said. And so, of course, that's going to happen else in others. Of course, that's going to happen. And I don't understand all of their conditioning, but I know that it is conditioned. Just from having seen my own heart and mind and how it shaped everything that happens here, shaped everything that happens in someone else, also shaped, also conditioned. And so it can create a little bit more space, perhaps, for us to have some more understanding about how and why people are doing what they're doing. We also see at times, you know, our own beliefs and views. So the internal contemplation shows how much we are shaped by our beliefs and our views. And if we're willing to get curious about those beliefs, we start to see we've actually just taken them to be true sometimes. Taken those beliefs to be just the way it is. But then as we start to see what's going on, we see, oh, it's a belief. And that belief has been shaped and came from my family history. That's what my parents believed. And that's what their parents believed. And maybe there's other possible worldviews. This is a worldview. It's one way to see the world. And so maybe our mind, our sense of what might be possible ways to see the world would expand. So this is also, as I'm talking about exploring internally and externally, I'm also pointing in ways to some of what we understand as we observe internally and externally. Some of the ways it leads to insight, understanding. The internal observation really pointing to the impermanent, unreliable, conditioned nature of our experience and how clinging to that, wanting it to be permanent, reliable, creates stress, that holding that Gil talked about yesterday, the suffering of the contraction of the clinging. And so the internal observation begins to help us to let go of that contraction. We also contract around what others do, what they believe, what they think. This is running rampant in the United States right now, in any case. And so the possibility of seeing that the views, the beliefs that others hold are also conditioned. Clinging to trying to get somebody else to believe what I believe. Suffering. So this kind of internal, external observation begins to break down our holding to the way we think we want things to be, and begin to open to this is the way it is. This is the way it is. And I will say this came up in one of the interviews today. There can be a misunderstanding, I think, about what it means to accept things as they are. That we might think it's just like, well, that means it's okay, or it means if I accept things as they are, it means I wouldn't want to do anything. It means equanimity, we sometimes think, means non-action. You know, that you're just fine sitting there. What I understand, this phrase, things as they are, sometimes a Pali phrase, yatha bhuta, is translated as things as they are. And yet that phrase itself is more kind of like things that have come to be. So what we are opening to, accepting, allowing, is what has come to be. What has already come to be. Everything that has conditioned us up to that moment, that is what is already here. That is what we are opening to, allowing, accepting, what has come to be. We can't change it. It's already come to be. So that movement towards equanimity about what has come to be is that real deep kind of acknowledgement of the truth of, yes, that has come to be. We might resist it or fight it or think we should try to change it, but we can't because it's already here. It's already happened. So that is what we are pointing to with the accepting what is here, what is already here. What happens in the next moment, how we respond to that. We may respond to that out of fear, confusion, anger, hostility, frustration, wanting things to be different. That usually leads to more fear, confusion, anger, hatred, wanting things to be different, more suffering. When we respond from greed, aversion, and delusion to things as they have come to be, it creates more greed, aversion, and delusion. It reinforces the pattern of greed, aversion, and delusion. There's also the possibility of responding out of non-greed, non-aversion, non-delusion. Now, we might think that means not responding. But there are wholesome movements to action, compassion being one of them. Equanimity, wisdom, want to act to alleviate suffering. Compassion wants to alleviate suffering. Wisdom wants to move in the direction of releasing craving, releasing clinging. And so what has come to be in that moment, an action may be based out of compassion. So this acceptance of things as they are is not about non-action. We see suffering externally. We feel that this kind of internal, external contemplation. We see someone struggling, in stress, distressed. Internally, we might feel a resonance there, feel a kind of an ache of the heart, and be motivated to do something, to offer them help, to offer them some kind of relief. That action could come out of fear or confusion or anger, or it could come out of compassion. So our exploration of this acceptance of things as they are, or allowing things as they are, is really the release of the unwholesome, unhelpful motivations for action, which leaves a lot of room for beautiful, skillful, helpful action. And then the third part of this refrain, both internally and externally. To me, this speaks a little bit to some of what I've been saying already about how if I'm aware of my own experience and observing someone else, see someone else experiencing something and perhaps struggling or suffering, how I am internally may then shape how I respond. Some of how I feel internally about what's happening there may inform me about what's going on for them. So, you know, we see somebody struggling in pain, expression on their face of in pain, and we may feel that because we kind of see that expression and feel it. Our face may kind of mimic the expression and feel, oh, there's pain there. And that may create the condition of wanting to act. So this internal and external is really to look at the effect that we have on each other. Somebody does something or says something, it affects us. We do something or say something, it affects other. We condition each other. We're not little isolated entities. So this interweaving, interplay of how I am affects, ripples out, touches others, and how others are ripples out and touches me. So this interweaving of conditioning between self and other. We know this. We know, in a way, how certain difficult mind states seem to have contagion, you know. Anger seems to be contagious. Fear can be contagious. It's the kind of way we resonate with each other. So we affect each other. We're designed to affect each other, I think. And the good news is mindfulness is also contagious. Compassion and love are also contagious. We also affect each other that way. And so this internal, external reflection, this sense of how we affect each other, that we affect each other, is a really strong motivation to cultivate as much goodness as we can internally, so that that will be what we're offering to the world. This exploration of how we affect each other. We can also use that kind of exploration, the description I offered earlier of the Rahula Sutta, that kind of checking or curiosity about when I'm taking an action, how does it affect other people? We not only learn about other people there, but we can also learn something about ourselves, learn something about our own views, our own ideas and perspectives, our own misunderstandings. So if you're exploring that, checking in before, during, after. Is this going to harm somebody? And the exploration, I think, to the Buddha's son, he spoke about just checking, is this action that you're thinking about doing going to hurt somebody? You know, is this teaching to a 7-year-old? So it's like that, you know, is that going to hurt somebody? As adults, we can look at, before we act, we can know we're going to do something, and we can think about, you know, we can model, think about how's it going to land for somebody else, and we can also reflect on, what's my motivation? Why am I doing this? What's my intention here? And if in the reflection, so if we see our intention is kind of bound up in selfishness or anger or frustration, we might have a kind of a pause. Yeah, I know that in the past when I've acted out of this anger, when those words have come out of my mouth, it's not been so pretty. So yeah, let's not go there. So we might reflect before, not only thinking about the action, but also about what's our intention. How are we inside? If we're thinking about this before, during, and we don't see, you know, that it's harm is, affliction is going to happen from it, the teaching says, go ahead. But we can have situations where we're following this, we're acting from what feels like the most connected and beautiful place in our hearts. And then still, suffering happens. Someone else is hurt. It rebounds on us even. We might, in that kind of recognition, we might just kind of think, well, it wasn't my intention. You know, that wasn't what I meant. I really was just trying to be help. I was just trying to help, be helpful. And must be their problem. You know, I was just being nice. That's a missed opportunity if you don't kind of keep looking or keep exploring, because this kind of encouragement, you know, so you're following along, check before, check during. Afterwards, if it has caused harm, if even all along you haven't thought it was going to cause harm, you've had the best intention that you could, and it has caused harm, to me, this teaching points to take some time to learn or connect with, understand what you didn't understand. So it's a way that we can begin to expand our understanding, both about how other people work, how they think, how they act, how they relate to things, and also potentially to something we might not have known. You know, some kind of view that we held, a perspective we held, that everybody thinks this way. Of course this would be, you know, what somebody would want me to do. So we may be holding a particular view or perspective that's not seen and applying it to somebody else. So this kind of exploration, this internal, external, how am I? How does it affect someone else? If we're curious about it, and particularly curious about the suffering, this is the thread that runs through the Buddhist teachings. Be curious about suffering. Be curious to understand suffering. And if suffering happens as a result of something I've done, be curious about it. These instructions aren't the instructions that if it has caused suffering, it doesn't say go and like flagellate yourself and tell yourself you're a bad person. It encourages you to reflect on it with a wise person. And this is something that can help us to learn or see things that ways we may have not been aware, may help us to uncover hidden views or hidden delusions that we had. So this internal external observation not only helps us understand something about others, but can help us understand something about ourselves if we're willing to watch and see, explore. The impact and look at our own possible contribution there, our own unawareness that might have contributed to the stress or suffering that happened there. Another kind of perspective on this topic of internal, external, it comes from a different kind of perspective entirely. And I bring this in because of the time of the retreat. You know, we're heading more into our daily lives tomorrow. In our daily lives, you know, here on retreat, probably those of you who are home, who are on the online retreat, you've been doing more of this in and out, back and forth, kind of taking in the content of our lives and engaging more with maybe family or friends or going out to stores or things. But here we've been pretty secluded. And so, you know, engaging with the We've had the opportunity to put aside much of the content of our lives here, those of us here at IRC. So the content of our lives, what we do, you know, who we speak to, the news that we get, the kind of everyday ordinary stuff we have to engage with, going to the grocery store, you know, the ordinary stuff of our lives, the world, engaging with the world. In its content and stories and perspectives and political parties and all of that. We could consider that kind of external in a way. The content of our lives is external. It's useful to be aware at times. Here on retreat, often we set aside the content. We're not so interested. When content arises, often we just let it kind of be in the background and turn more towards the internal. How is the experience internally? You know, that content is there, but how's the experience internally? In our daily lives, this kind of forget about the content and just attend internally, often this is not what often happens if people feel like the content is out of bounds for mindfulness practice, is that mindfulness goes out the window. We're not so used to cultivating the awareness with all the content, with all of the, you know, the conversations and this talking and the doing our taxes or whatever. We're not so used to engaging with mindfulness in those activities. And so this may perhaps, I don't know if this internal external contemplation is encouraging this or not, but I know this is a really useful practice. Well, that's partly why I'm bringing it in, and it feels like it might be tangentially connected here. So really useful to begin to, can you be aware with the content of your life? So maybe you'll have some opportunity with this in the last part of the retreat as you do your final cleanings and yogi jobs and putting things away and putting things in your car. You know, you have to be engaged with the content of that. So be aware. You know, in the ordinariest of ways, taking things to my car. And the clear comprehension teaching of the Satipatthana Sutta, this is, when walking, one knows one's walking. When reaching, one knows one's reaching. When sitting or standing, one knows one's sitting or standing. When talking, one knows one's talking. Just in a really simple way. Just know the content. Be aware with the content. So that might be the external contemplation. The internal side of that is, how does it affect you? So there's this content happening, this conversation, this story, this narrative is coming up in my life. It's not just thinking, you know, it is thinking, but the content of that thinking ripples through us, affects how we feel, conditions emotions. We see this. A thought arises in our mind, and poof, there's an emotion that comes with it, a memory, and there's the emotion. Content has a big effect on us. And so content and the internal experience. Exploring the possibility of an awareness that can broaden to meet both. That, to me, would be kind of an internal and external contemplation. A very broad awareness that can know the kind of everyday, ordinary activity that's happening, the context of what I'm doing, and how I am with it. This is not an easy practice. It's not something that we have learned to value. And it takes some practice. And so, you know, you can play with it. I think the back and forth can be a way in to beginning to explore it. You might have to be aware kind of first of, okay, here's the content. I'm reading this news article. So read a paragraph. And then turn internally. How am I having read that? How did that content affect me? Feel the emotions, feel the contraction, feel the confusion, whatever comes up. Then read another paragraph. External. How does it affect me? Internal. External. Internal. So kind of a back and forth weaving. And over time, the skill begins to grow that while you're reading, while you're engaged in some content or activity, the capacity to know how you are. While you're having a conversation, you can simultaneously know how you are responding, know what kind of emotions and fears are coming up. So this kind of exploration in daily life, my teacher in Burma calls it 50-50 mindfulness. 50% of the attention on the content, 50% of the attention on the inside, how you are with the content. Carol Wilson, a teacher I often teach with explore Sayadaw Utejaniya's teachings, said, that language doesn't work for me, 50-50 mindfulness. This doesn't make sense. But I like this kind of sense of 360-degree mindfulness. Mindfulness in all directions, taking in everything, content and how I am. It really is a expanded kind of mindfulness. It's possible, this kind of mindfulness. We often think of a focused attention on something in particular, but it's possible for our mindfulness to broaden and take in external and internal. And it's very useful as a way to navigate our lives. So let's just sit for a moment.